Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to call this meeting to order. We have HESC members here. We do have a quorum, so we're going to get started because we have a heavy schedule today. First of all, if you have BlackBerry cell phones and all, you need to turn those off while you're in the meeting. I appreciate that. And at this time, you have present Senator Meyer, Senator Dyson, and Vice Chair Senator Egan and myself, Betty Davis. The first bill that we're going to have come before us is Senate Bill 134. We've heard this bill before. Therefore, I need my vice chair to bring this up so we can start working on the bill. Okay?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm assuming that I move CS
yes.
for Senate Bill 134 for purposes of discussion. I'll object.
Yeah, I'll object so and we can discuss. Fiscal. Yes. Okay, when is the Senate bill is before us? Is there somebody from Senator Kukes' office to present this bill? Would you please come forward? And we're going to turn it over to you at this time. We'd like for you to state your name for the record, and then you can go through the CS for us. Thank you.
Thank you, committee. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Kimberly Clark, staff to Senator Kukesh. And today before you, we have the CS for Senate Bill 134, which is basically relating to the putting child support awards into statute. The CS, the first change that we have is on page 1, line 2. They've added in and providing for an effective date. The next change to the CS is on page 15. Line 4, they've added in for the purpose of establishing a monthly support obligation for monthly health care expenses, a tribunal shall apply a rebuttable presumption that the cost of health insurance is reasonable under this section if the cost of purchasing health insurance does not exceed 5% of the responsible parent's net income.
Okay.
And the next change that we made in the bill is on page 16. Line 2 was removed if a party has made a reasonable demand for documentation under this subsection. A tribunal may modify a child support arrearage retroactively. And this was removed from the bill to comply with the 45 CFR 303-106, which is the procedures to prohibit retroactive modification of child support arrearages. And that's in the Code of Federal Regulations. Also on page 16, line 29, they removed and AS 2528050B.
Could you tell me, nothing was added, it was just something removed?
It was just removed, that statute, due to the changes, yeah.
Okay. You may continue.
And the next change was made on page 18. And that's line 1 was added in and changed the section to 25.28095, which is the review of the guidelines. The Child Support Services Agency established in AS 2527010 shall notify the legislative committees with jurisdiction over matters involving child support awards of the need for a compliance review of the guidelines established in this chapter every 4 years as provided in federal law. The compliance review must include a determination of whether the application of the guidelines consistently results in a determination of appropriate child support awards in the state. And then on the same page 18, line 8, they just corrected the next section number. And on page 19, line 22 to 23 was added section 6. The uncodified law of the state of Alaska is amended by adding a new section to read, And line 24 through 27 was added transition, the Child Support Services Agency. The Child Support Services Agency established in AS2527010 may proceed to adopt regulations necessary to implement the changes made by AS2528. Enacted by Section 1 of this Act, but the regulations may not take effect before the effective date of Section 1 of this Act. And then line 28, Section 7 was added in, stating Section 6 of this Act takes effect immediately under AS011007C. And line 29 was added, Section 8, except as provided in Section 7 of this Act, this Act takes effect July 1st, 2013. Okay. And we're hoping with that that Child Support Services will have ample time to complete the transition.
Thank you. Are there any questions at this time from the committee? Those changes was made. We have the new CS before us. Is there somebody from Child Support online or here to speak to the changes? Or
Madam Chair,
are there anybody sign up to testify to this? Okay.
Madam Chair, this is John Mowley with Child Support.
Yes.
Both Stacy Steinberg from the Attorney General's office and I are here, and just a quick look at those changes, I believe, covers the concerns we had last time. We'd have
Very
to
good. I'm
look
glad
at them in a little more detail. We were trying to follow along, but since we don't have a copy of
it. You don't have a copy of that. Are they able to get it now? Okay.
Okay. Yes.
We're going to see that you get it, so you'll have it, a hard copy of it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you, Senator Morris.
Thank you. And while we have the gentleman on the line, is there a fiscal note from the Hess Department on this bill? I see one from the courts.
Through the chair, this is John Mallon. There is a fiscal note from Department of Revenue on this bill. It's about $6.7 million.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments? This time. Is there anybody in the audience that plan to speak to this bill?
No.
Is there anybody online that's planned to speak to the bill that's before us? You're none. We're going to come back to the CS. Is there further discussion by the members of the committee? It is my intention to move this bill from my committee, and I'm looking at the CS, and the CS doesn't tell me where it goes next. But is that finance?
Senator Davis, it's the next move is to the judiciary.
Oh, it goes. Oh, it has judiciary. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Yes, Senator Dykes.
I'm thinking. Okay. so if we respond to the question raised by the Alaska Department Health Board, and we have, particularly, and I think the North Star may have some as well. But anyways, we received these, and I just, it seems...
Oh, would North Star have something to do with this?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Forget it.
That's the next bill.
Right. I'm sorry.
The next bill.
Yeah. Forget everything I said after all.
Okay, we'll forgive you for that. We are now back on the child support bill. So.
Yep.
And it's my understanding that everything that was discussed at the last meeting has been addressed and it has been put into the new CS. And the people that are online, you know, at first blush, they're saying that they think their needs have been met. We're sending the CS to them, but this has two other committees of referral, and as far as what I can see from Health and Social Services side, I think we've done what we need to do, and I'm asking to move this bill from my committee to the next committee of referral.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move CS for Senate Bill 134. The working draft that we're using is 27 LS 067 /B and attached physical notes.
Yes.
With attached physical notes and individual recommendations.
Yes. Hear no objection, then the bill will be moved. We'll take just a short, brief time to sign it and get prepared for the next bill that's going to come before us. Thank you very much. I also need a motion to adopt the new CS that we have for this particular bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we adopt CS for Senate Bill 55, a working draft 27LS0082 /T.
And I will object for purpose of discussion. And at this time, I have my staff person to go over the new bill, new CS for us. You state your name for the record and you can begin your discussion there.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman. Tom Obermeyer, staff to Senator Davis. The bill before you, Senate Bill 55, is an act relating to mental health patients, notifications, and grievance procedures. This is not the first bill that Senator Davis has brought before the legislature concerning revising mental health grievance procedures, which is a one-paragraph statement in our statutes. The sponsor statement reads that Senate Bill 55 amends the one-paragraph mental health grievance procedure provided under AS 4730-847. This bill governs due process and grievance procedures in all state and private mental health hospitals, clinics, and units which receive public funds. Prompted by the 8 to 10,000 admissions to mental health facilities and units in Alaska each year where there are relatively few formal grievances filed, this bill requires adequate notice, forms, advocate assistance, rapid written administrative response, right to appeal, and telephonic access to a state-monitored call center to lodge a complaint immediately. Mental health patients are among the most vulnerable in Alaska. Among the thousands of individuals civilly committed or brought into locked hospital psychiatric units for forced evaluations each year, some are in handcuffs, shackles, or strapped to a gurney, involuntarily medicated without consent of family or legal representative, or court-ordered to receive or continue psychiatric treatment in public, private, or nonprofit psychiatric clinics. There are hundreds of patient assaults and staff injuries each year. You will find also some evidence of this in the documents that were recently submitted from API on their dashboard, which indicates hundreds of assaults alone in 2011. There are also thousands of children who are voluntarily committed each year, usually in private facilities. Although some are treated with psychotropic drugs, children are considered better protected by the state, family members, legal representatives, and attorney advocates. Current statutes and regulations do little to protect psychiatric patients civilly committed 30 to 60 days, individuals detained for forced evaluation up to 7 days, or individuals detained in a jail or a psychiatric emergency room or private unit while waiting for space in a psychiatric hospital. State and federal courts have consistently ruled that individuals who have not committed a crime and are locked up for psychiatric evaluation and treatment should not be treated like criminals, and their rights are to remain intact to the greatest extent possible. Ironically, prisoners in Alaska's correctional system are afforded a much more comprehensive grievance procedure with due process rights and protections under the law than mental health patients. Upon admission to a mental health facility, patients often experience an immediate loss of liberty and freedom, arbitrary exercise of authority, and may be institutionally traumatized in the process. Because of the exceptional circumstances under which mental health patients are admitted and treated, due process requires special safeguards and transparent, readily available grievance procedures and more state oversight. This bill will reduce unnecessary patient trauma, assaults, unintentional injury or death, and attendant liability and litigation experienced in other states before statutory reform. New grievance procedures under SB 5 require detailed complaint forms, 3 levels of administrative review, requiring written answers by or within 5 days by supervisory and executive staff at levels 1 and 2, including a response to urgent grievances within 24 hours. A level 3 final administrative appeal to the commissioner must be answered within 14 days after filing or by default is denied. And I'll note that this CS took out the a third-level appeal to an administrative hearing officer. This has, in our view, streamlined the bill a bit and is still operational even for private units that would have a third level going to the commissioner. The final review, I go on, says after that, if they wished for an appeal, it goes to the Superior Court within 30 days. After the commissioner. A grievance may be filed at any time, but there is a statutory limitation of 1 year after being discharged from the facility or unit. All grievances filed shall become part of the patient's permanent record. This is a very significant fact. Mental health facilities and units must file periodic reports of the number and type of grievances and resolutions, including litigation. Right now, there is no formal tracking of what's going on in these institutions across the state by the state. The bill allows for a personal representative to act in the interest of the patient in the grievance process, as well as providing a patient advocate appointed in the mental health facility or unit. Although it is counterintuitive that more verbal and written complaints are not reported to the state or documented each year, including an estimated 250 at the Alaska Psychiatric Institute, which may treat an estimated 1,200 to 1,500 patients per year, many facilities in this rapidly growing area of mental health are privately held and not presently compelled to report to the State Division of Behavioral Health. Private hospitals presently may only report mental health complaints to the Joint Commission for Accreditation of Hospital Organizations, JACO, not the state. Furthermore, JACO reportedly may only review grievance procedures in participating hospitals every 2 to 3 years. Also, many grievances in the past have been handled verbally without creating a patient record, and inpatient stays are often very short, from a couple of days to a week or two. Passage of SB 55 will improve mental health treatment, grievance reporting, and state oversight. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them, but I would like to mention one last thing. We do have our drafter online who can answer some questions. I had a call from Wilda Laughlin from the department that explained that that she apologized they didn't get to us earlier on it, but they have some concerns about it, as in the past with the bill. And you'll also hear from Kate Burkhart, who I believe is here, that about their concerns from the Mental Health Board. So as to the drafting and questions that I just discussed, I'd be happy to answer them, or you can go on with other people to testify.
Ms. Stovermeyer, what I would like for you to do is take the CS and go through the CS and identify all the changes that have been made in the bill so that we can walk the committee through it, and then they may be able to ask their questions or state their concerns or then move into public testimony.
Well, I think it'd be helpful for me to go through the sectional, which is providing.
I want you to make sure you can go through the sectional analysis. I don't care how you do it, but I want you to go through everything that has been changed in the bill that make it different from what we had originally.
If it would be helpful, I'd like Jean Michelle to come on at this point, who is listening. I think she could better answer that question. Could you check if she's there?
Jean Michelle, are you there?
Hello.
Hello there.
Yes, this is Jean Michelle with Legal Services.
Are you willing to walk through this bill with us?
I can do that, Madam Chair. I think you were asking about the differences between this CS and the prior CS, but I'm not sure which CS you had been working from in the committee.
This is the T version.
The only thing that the committee have seen is the original bill that was for them. We have the CS before us. Okay. All the other changes that was made were never shared with the committee. So what they have is what we have made the changes on in the CS and the original bill.
We're word on back slash T.
T, yes.
Okay, if you give me a moment, I can look at the original bill and do a quick comparison. I can tell you immediately that on page 2, lines starting at line 22, continuing through to page 3, line 5, we've added several additional rights, patient rights, to that section for people undergoing evaluation or treatment in a mental health facility as specified in the on page 1 of the bill. The patient grievance procedure has been modified in this version to exclude the hearing officer, the administrative hearings office, and put all of the hearings in to either the commission or the commissioner's office or the hospital or the facilities location, so that the hearings that the decisions that are made are then of the Commissioner of Health and Social Services is then directly appealable to the Superior Court rather than having an administrative hearing at the Administrative Hearing Office. There were some concerns expressed by some of the members of the public that they thought that that wouldn't work in this context. And so if you look at page 5 of the bill, of the CS version T, the initial review is the same by a supervisory staff member level 2. The resolution has to be agreed upon from level 1, or grievant may initiate a 20-day. We added calendar days to clarify that those were not business days but calendar days. And then level 3 is appealable to the Commissioner of Health and Social Services within 30 days after that. We also provided that those were calendar days, not business days, for that time period. We clarified some of the provisions on page 5, starting at line 27, pertaining to how the grievant is notified of the decisions that are made under each level of review. We clarified on page 6 in this version that the urgent level of review for the acts that are listed on lines 10 through 16 on page 6, that was in addition to any criminal or other kind of procedure that would be available to the grievant. And that was maintained as an additional level of review in this bill, as I understand it, because there was a concern that the department may not be tracking those more serious allegations in a database. So this would ensure that that was handled as both an administrative concern as well as a criminal concern. On page 6, line 18, we clarify that the 5-day extension of any of the time periods set out in C7 is 5 business days. And we changed on page 8 the meaning of the facility. We had described, cross-referenced it to AS 4738.47. Those are the bigger changes. There were some other more minor wording changes that were made for clarity. And I'm available for questions.
And we certainly thank you for going through that. Thank you very much. Are there any questions from Gene at this time? For Gene at this time? Hear none at this point. We're going to go from the, we don't have to go through the section because she pretty much hit most of it in the new CS. Is there anyone signed up to testify? We have one person in the audience here. Everybody else said they're here for questions, asking their questions. Kate, do you want to testify? You want Bert Hart? I haven't got to that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kate Burkhart, and I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Mental Health Board. And I preface my comments by saying they are on behalf of the board and no one else, especially the Department of Health and Social Services. I provided written comment earlier in the day. It should be in your packet. I do have a tendency to overkill, so I'm going to limit my comments to 3 areas. But you have the comprehensive comment in your packet. The 3 areas I'd like to focus on are the scope of the bill, the issue around the way the bill fits in with accepted administrative law tenets, and the issue of the emergency grievance. Before I get into that, though, I really want to thank the sponsor and her staff. We have been working on the issue of mental health patient grievances for over 3 years now together. And while I know it has been an arduous process for the sponsor and her staff to be so inclusive, the fact is that they have taken every effort to listen not only to the Alaska Mental Health Board, but to other stakeholders and consumers. And so with that, I do think that SB 55 has come a long way from its previous incarnations, and there's a lot of improvement. And I think working together, we can get it to where it affects the sponsor's intent, which is to improve access to a grievance procedure for vulnerable Alaskans and address those remaining concerns. On the issue of scope, the improved definition of what a facility is, I think, is meant to limit the scope of SB 55 to what we call designated evaluation and treatment facilities, which are those hospitals with mental health units to which a person is committed involuntarily under Title 47. If that's the intent, we're very excited. However, there are other references in the CS that lead to the possible construction of the bill that would apply SB 55 to community behavioral health centers and providers of voluntary mental health services. There is a difference between involuntary treatment, which I think Mr. Obermeyer spent quite a bit of time characterizing, and voluntary community-based services, where I choose to go, and it's an ongoing therapeutic relationship that is built on a collaborative relationship with the provider. Having an adversarial process, we think, leads to the possibility of compromising that relationship. It also doesn't accept the distinguishing factors between voluntary treatment and involuntary acute care treatment in a hospital setting. So I would suggest that further attention be paid to the definitions in the CS around what a facility is, so that it clearly defines it as hospital settings like Alaska Psychiatric Institute and those hospitals with mental health units to which people are involuntarily committed. In addition to the concern around any impairment to that therapeutic relationship is the fact that if SB 55 were to apply to community behavioral health providers, it would create a third and conflicting layer of requirements for grievance procedures. I have provided a matrix that I created when we first started this conversation in 2009 that shows what our community behavioral health centers are already required to do when it comes to patient grievances. The federal government, anyone who receives Medicaid dollars, is required to comply with the grievance regulations in the Code of Federal Regulations. And those are extensive, and those are on the right side of your matrix. So our community behavioral health centers have to comply with those federal regulations because they're Medicaid funded. That's layer number one. The Division of Behavioral Health has required our community behavioral health centers to pursue accreditation, accrediting bodies like the Joint Commission and CARF and other healthcare accreditors have their own requirements for patient grievances. And so that's layer number two. I agree with the senator that access to an understandable, easy-to-navigate grievance process is very important. And I think that can be done in the bill as long as we recognize that we've got some other layers that we have to deal with. And so that's why I have focused so heavily over the iterations on scope, because we have some other layers we have to deal with. One of the areas with scope that I was really concerned about in previous iterations, which have been solved in the CS, is the definition of a grievance. In the past, it included a much broader definition, which was in conflict with the Code of Federal Regulations, but now it fits with what the CFR requires. On the issue of how SB 55 fits in with the administrative procedures that are described, other than the Alaska Psychiatric Institute, the providers of involuntary mental health services are private nonprofit hospitals. They are not administrative agencies, and the receipt of funds from the state doesn't convert them into administrative agencies. And so level three, which requires the commissioner to make a determination, doesn't really work because under the way the administrative law works, the agencies, the hospitals, don't have to submit to the commissioner's determination. So I think we need to look at what will work at a level three review that provides that impartial review for the patient, but also doesn't create an environment where the mental health treatment provider can circumvent what the bill's intent is because they're not an administrative agency. So I think that that's a place where we could focus a little bit more. I am still concerned about the shifting of the burden of proof in the CS. As it's written now, the hospital has to prove something didn't happen. That is not the way that, in most cases, the burden of proof is set. Usually, the person bringing forward the claim or the complaint has to prove something happened. And I recognize that my particular constituency, especially in this situation, is particularly vulnerable and may not be able to be articulate about what's happening. To balance that, they often have an attorney through the Disability Law Center or the Office of Public Advocacy who can speak, either help them speak for themselves or speak for themselves. The bill does require patient advocates who can help the person speak for themselves. And so this shifting of the burden of proof, I think, was meant to level the playing field for a particularly vulnerable complainant. However, it creates an environment where the mental health provider always has to prove something didn't happen. And that's not fair to the provider. And so I think that that needs additional attention, especially given the fact that if SB 55 only applies to those situations where someone has been involuntarily committed, they have representation. And SB 55 requires a patient advocate. So they have help. The final area that I wanted to talk about in my spoken comment has to do with the emergency grievance. I appreciate the comments from Jean Michelle that it was retained in the CS because there was concern that the department was not tracking violent offenses like assault and abuse against patients. In fact, all of those incidents are reported to the department when they happen, and they are tracked. As the Alaska Mental Health Board, my concern is that crimes against people with disabilities are often marginalized and minimized. And I am very concerned by any statute that would classify a sexual assault, a violent assault, forms of abuse as a grievance. It's a crime. The federal regulations require it to be reported to an investigating authority. The accrediting requirements require it be reported to an investigating authority. They should be reported to law enforcement, not relegated to the same kind of complaint resolution as, I don't like the group I'm in, I'd like to switch to a different group. And so, wearing my advocacy hat, I'm very concerned about classifying crimes as grievances. There are some additional suggestions in my written comment, but those three areas were the ones I wanted to speak to you about today. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony there. Are there any questions of any questions, any statements? Thank you very much.
Madam Chair?
I'm just not looking at your written report, but thanks.
Yeah. Is it your intention as a bill sponsor to speak up these issues that have been raised by Kate?
I have made note of what her concerns are. Am I going to speak to them today? No, I'm not.
Are you? Excuse me. But
if you have some comments to make, I'm looking at those things. We're going to weigh them. There's a certain part that I feel that health and social services need to deal with in my committee. And some of those things that she mentioned need to be handled in judiciary. I can't say, I see it as a grievance. They might see it as a crime. They can identify it, let them do it. But I'm not going to do it in my committee.
Okay. Is it your intention to pass the bill today?
Oh, I'm not sure where we will or not. I think we're not ready to pass it out today, and that was not my intention.
Yeah. And
my intention was to get all the information that we could get, make the final changes that we want to make, and come up with a CS that we can adopt. And the CS is not ready at this point, so I'm not moving the bill.
Good. Thank you.
But when the bill come back to me, the next time I do plan to move it without addressing some of the things that she mentioned in her verbal statement.
So then I'll reserve any questions I have till we see the new improved version. And
right.
Thank you for that.
And any suggestions or thoughts that you might have, now is a good time to put them on the table. I have carried this bill around, and we do have some people who want to get their testimony. So if there's no other questions, I'd like to move
just
into that.
Quickly.
Yes.
I appreciate what you've said and you for a long time. The community-based institutions, how small do they get? Like how many, what's the minimum number of client patients they might have?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, it depends on the community. In some situations, the community behavioral health provider in a village is actually the behavioral health aide in the clinic, which is part of a larger tribal health corporation. So they're part of a big organization, but there's actually one person on the ground and just a few clients. Anchorage Community Mental Health is one of our largest providers in Anchorage, and they serve hundreds of people. So it just depends.
Specifically, then, the edges of abuse that I've seen is people being over-medicated in somewhat informal situations. And would you speak to, is that a real issue or am I off base? And what do we have in place now that protects those folks?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, I can provide the two perspectives I hear as part of the Alaska Mental Health Board. There are people who feel that medication should be the treatment of last resort or perhaps even no resort. And then there are people who feel that everyone should be medicated. I think that based on, you know, the last 5 years of experience that I have, what is true is kind of in the middle. I think some people that have either a good support network or have become empowered to work with their treatment providers have the ability to say, I don't like the way I feel on medication X.
You're giving me a more elaborate answer than I need.
Yes, sir.
Do you think there is a real problem with some folks? And if there is, are the protections and remedies that the senator is after adequate for that few people?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, I think in a community setting, the remedy is to work with the treatment team. In a hospital setting where medication is often ordered by a court, the remedy is through the court system. Could there be better oversight of the grievance procedures and the treatment modalities in community behavioral health centers? In some situations, yes. Do I think that over-medication is pervasive throughout Alaska? No. Does that help?
Does anything need to be changed in statute, like Senator Davis is after here, to help that specific population?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, the specific population that feels they're over-medicated?
That I feel might be over-medicated, we hear.
I think that encouraging the increased use of patient advocates will allow a person to bring their feelings of being over-medicated, or a family member to say, my sister is over-medicated, we need to do something, to the treatment provider, and then that's a decision that should be worked out together. Again, because that's a voluntary treatment situation. In a hospital, I think that a grievance procedure with a patient advocate is probably a better way to go, just realizing there's a court process as well.
I think she said no. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We do have offline, we have Jim Gostine. Are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Do you wish to testify on this bill?
Yes, I would.
Okay, we'll open to you now. You may state your name for the record and give your testimony.
Thank you, Senator Davis. My name is Jim Gottstein. I'm with the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights, known as Psych Rights. And the first thing I want to talk about is I'm pretty familiar with appealing consumers appealing decisions to the courts. And one of the things that happens is that if the person loses, the Attorney General's office has a policy of seeking attorney's fees against the person under Civil Rule 82. And I found that that's had a chilling effect on people trying to enforce their rights. And in fact, Ms. Faith Myers, I talked to her about actually doing that for a grievance, and it was going to potentially jeopardize, she doesn't have that much to get, but jeopardize her permanent fund dividend, and she, you know, felt that was too important to her. It would be too much of a financial burden. So I would suggest that on page 5, line 23, at the very end, you might consider adding, quote, if such an appeal is filed, no attorney fee award against the grievant may be ordered by the court. And then I probably should have started by saying I think it's very important to beef up the grievance procedures. And one of the things is when I was on the mental health board in 2005, we actually got the division to require grievance procedures in all of their grants to community-based systems. And But what we wanted to do was get them to put those in regulations because it was so easy to just take them out, and I think that we've seen that as a problem. And so while I think there is a true difference between involuntary commitment and the community-based system, I think that it's the idea that the community-based system is a totally voluntary and collaborative approach is very often not the case, and people don't really feel that they have much opportunity to get what they want or need or complain. And so I think it's important to require the community-based systems as well as the private nonprofit involuntary evaluation and treatment facilities to have workable and easy to use grievance procedures. So that's pretty much what I. And then the last thing is with respect to Senator Dyson's comment or question: Are there remedies adequate for people that are being over medicated? And I would say very definitely not. But I would suggest that the problem isn't so much procedural remedies, but that the system needs to really reorient, although I would like that, but to have non-medication alternatives available on a more regular basis. And the system is so oriented towards everybody getting medication that the other approaches are really not even available to people, and that's the big problem.
Thank you for your testimony. Would that complete your testimony?
Yes, thank you.
Any other questions? Here none. There's no one else signed up to testify unless somebody's come online since we took your testimony. Is there anyone present that want to testify?
This is Faith Myers in Anchorage and Dorrance Collins, and we would like to testify.
Very good. I didn't have your names, but we'd like to hear your testimony. Faith Myers, you want to go first?
Yes, I would. My name is Faith Myers. I volunteer as a psychiatric patient advocate. This is to the chairperson and committee members. I support the passage of Senate Bill 55. We are asking the legislators to set basic grievance procedure rights for psychiatric patients and appeals. The Department of Health and Social Services are providers, and they operate a psychiatric facility. They would not be the best organization to set grievance procedure rules. Psychiatric patients are complaining about the current grievance procedure laws. In 2009, I performed a survey of 30 former psychiatric patients. Also, I have personally reviewed the grievance procedures from numerous hospitals with psychiatric units from Fairbanks to Juneau to Kodiak. The reviewed grievance procedures are inadequate to protect an individual detained in a psychiatric unit. In 2003, I spent 4 months in Alaska Psychiatric Institute, which is run by the Department of Health and Social Services. I was never allowed to file a grievance. A grievance must be answered in writing. I never could receive a written response to my complaints or file an appeal. In 2006, as an advocate, I received records from API which showed no patient in the middle of 2005-2006 was allowed to file a grievance and receive a written response. The current psychiatric patient grievance procedure law, AS 4738-47, is poorly written and does not properly protect detained psychiatric patients that file a complaint. Also, the current law does not cover all detained psychiatric patients, according to DHSS. Currently, the only due process rules for a detained patient's complaint come from the Joint Commission for the Accreditation of Hospital Organizations and Hospital Policy. JACO gives psychiatric hospitals and units 14 days to resolve a patient's complaint, and there is no appeal process mandated. Most psychiatric patients are detained less than 14 days. There is nothing in state law and very little in state regulations concerning due process for a patient's complaints or appeals. If Senate Bill 55 does not pass, then psychiatric institutions can go back to business as usual. When psychiatric institutions have a right to say when psychiatric patients can file a grievance and set due process rights, eventually institutions will say that no patient has a right to file a grievance. In closing, I am asking you to pass Senate Bill 55, which will improve in law a psychiatric patient's right to file a grievance.
I thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Hearing none, we'll go to Ron Atla. I'm sorry. Ron is just there to answer questions should we want him. Dorrance Collins.
All right. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Dorrance Collins. I'd like to preface by saying that psychiatric patients, when they file a complaint, rarely, if ever, have an attorney. I have the assistance of an attorney when they file a complaint. They're basically on their own, and with a poor set of rules, they're at a very severe disadvantage when they're dealing with a multi-million dollar corporation. And I'll continue my testimony. I volunteer as the mental health advocate, and I support the passage of Senate Bill 55. Senate Bill 55, among other things, when passed, will, for the first time in Alaska, guarantee all psychiatric patients the right to due process for their complaints and appeals within the psychiatric facilities and to the state. I believe only the legislature can grant state grievance procedure rights for psychiatric patients. Anything else is just a rule or and does not have to be strictly followed. The current grievance procedure rules do not protect psychiatric patients. The Joint Commission for Accreditation of Hospitals, JACO, does not require an appeal process within the psychiatric hospitals or units or to the state. The grievance procedure law, AS 4730-847, does not cover all detained patients and does not require due process for patient complaints, nor an appeal process within the psychiatric facilities or to the state, and there's no written response requirements. The Department of Health and Social Services produced 4 pages of grievance procedure requirements for grantee facilities. Patients can file a complaint, but grantee facilities can ask for an extension of time. The amount of time can be open-ended. Patients can file an appeal, but there's no time frame for completion. There's no appeal process to the state and no written response requirements. The Department of Health and Social Services operates the Alaska Psychiatric Institute. In 2006, a caveat was in the patient grievance procedure that stated that patients would not be allowed to file complaints on certain subjects. That caveat may have been removed. In 2011, API's patient grievance procedure had a caveat that stated that patients could not contact an advocacy organization until the patient exhausted all grievance procedure remedies within the hospital, which may be anywhere from 1 week to several months. Disability Law Center filed a complaint concerning that issue in 2011. 3 hospitals do civil commitments. 7 do forced psychiatric evaluations. The point I'm making, because of poor grievance procedure laws and state oversight, as of now, hospitals can basically put just about any caveat they want to into their psychiatric patient grievance procedure. I support the passage of Senate Bill 55. I have a couple of additions that I would suggest are added. Page 2, line 31, it should state, patients have a right to file a grievance any time during business hours for outpatients, anytime that does not conflict with emergency care for patients in locked facilities or units. Page 2, line 32, add patients have a right to due process with regard to a grievance. It's important to give patients the right to due process. They don't have it now. Page 7, line 18, patients have a right any day to consult with a patient advocate or representative of patient choosing during reasonable hours. Line, page 3, line 25, add formal grievance and appeal process. And the last addition is concerning the urgent grievance procedure. It needs to be simplified. It needs to state such grievances, urgent grievances, such grievances must be reviewed by the chief administrative officer, the director or designee, who shall either arrange to hear the grievance within one working day or immediately refer the grievance to level one for response. The last comment I have is these community-based facilities, some of these individuals go into them, are court-ordered to receive treatment. They either receive the treatment that's provided or suggested, or they go to jail. It's not just the patients in locked facilities that need grievance procedure rights. Thank you very much for your time.
Well, I want to thank you for your testimony. I don't hear the questions at this time. Were you looking at Virgin T when you were given the page numbers?
Yes.
Okay.
And I've also sent written testimony down there, so it should be right there handy, my written testimony and the pages that I suggested.
All right. Thank you very much. You know, and there's a couple other items that we have picked up, something from North Star and some other comments, but we're going to look at that and we're going to work through it and try to finalize our CS and come back at another date to bring this back before this committee. Are there any comments that anyone want to make before we adjourn? Senator Dyson.
Thanks for doing this.
Yes. Thank you. I think we've come a long ways. I think we can get there. I'm feeling a lot better about it, and we will try to come back to you with a better CS the next time around. Thank you very much. And at this point, we're going to adjourn. Thank you, committee.